Hello and welcome to episode 15 of War Stories. This is B-Rax, and I think after some thinking, I'm just going to wrap up my first Iraq deployment. I think you've gotten the picture that it was just shooting and stuff and people getting wounded up basically until we left. So I'm going to talk more about when 1-3 came to relieve us. I'm going to talk about the transition back to Hawaii. The trip back to Hawaii, and then the first little bit of reprieve before we started another workout or workup. So the war kept dragging on, and you know, we knew that we were going to go home eventually. We didn't really know the dates, but then it comes time for the rip, and we're getting replaced by 1-3, who is our sister battalion. They're there in K Bay. They did it like a weird 5-month deployment to Afghanistan, but I don't think they saw any combat. And then they got pulled out early and then sent to relieve us. Now, somebody from 1-3, correct me on that, but I remember talking to the guys and being kind of like, oh, that's interesting that you guys had a shortened deployment and then you're coming to relieve us. Oh, and another thing I forgot. This is another reason why I'm kind of doing this is 2nd Battalion, 3rd Marines is being deactivated today. Today is the 21st of January. They're having a ceremony. They're streaming it, so I'm assuming you can find it and watch it. Yeah, it's part of the new reorganization of the Marine Corps, which I don't know if I've ever touched on that, but they're getting a little bit weird. Recently got rid of tanks, stuff like that, stuff that I personally think is a bad idea, but I'm not a general, so who knows. So 1-3 starts showing up, and I remember the biggest thing that struck out to us, and this is not an insult to them, they're still Marines, they're still very fit, but I think that we had just all become so emaciated and tanned, and we could walk so far and so fast without breaking a sweat. And these guys looked like they were like pudgy. I know that they were still fit guys, but they just compared to us, they like stuck out as looking a little bit doughy, a little bit pale. And I think that they just, you know, that when you first get there, the amount of walking that you do, you don't really know. You don't really notice it after you've been there for however long we're there, 8 months, 9 months. And you just can just patrol because you literally, during your 2 weeks of patrolling, that's all you do for 2 weeks straight. You just walk all day, all night. You stop in for little like 6-hour breaks. But then you just keep walking. You're on your feet all day. I mean, looking at them actually right now, they're up on the shelf. I have my boots that I had. There are some nice Danners, and the soles were just completely rubbed flat. Like the tread was completely rubbed off. That's how many miles we would walk. And so these guys, they just looked like none of them complained. We didn't have to stop doing anything, so I'm not talking shit. But you could tell they were all like sweating on their brow. Sweating a lot when we were all kind of just smoking cigarettes and just walking and just continuing and just continuing. And they also had a new flak jacket that was new to us, the MTV. And as I get into the second workup, I'll talk a little bit more about that. But it was basically like it was bigger than us or bigger than ours. So that might have contributed a little bit to them looking more sweaty than us. But basically, it was a huge mistake that the Marine Corps made at that time, and that's the 2007 time frame. So we start doing some patrols where you do left seat, right seat with them. And then, you know, as we start rotating with them, one-for-one squad, some of the leadership stays behind. And I was a radio operator, so I stayed behind for a little bit longer than everybody else, but not as long as like our squad leaders did. We started doing some patrols, and just they just seemed so like not lost, but they were very, like, there were telltale signs when we knew we were about to get hit. I remember there was this one time we were down in like the bazaar area where I had almost been killed by a grenade and a bunch of guys had been wounded. And all of a sudden the bazaar just empties out. And then a truck pulls up and it's Staff Sergeant Khifu, who's one of my personal heroes, and like we're all there and it's like, okay, get on the truck, move. And I'm a Lance Corporal, like yelling at corporals and sergeants, like, get on the fucking truck. And we're all getting ready to get hit. We didn't actually end up getting hit because I think we got out of there just in time. But, when you're loading on trucks or offloading from trucks and you're kind of discombobulated, you're not in your like actual tactical column formation, that's kind of the best time for them to hit you. Plus, they know that you're about to go back to the FOB, so you're like done. You're not gonna necessarily be in a position where you can really do anything against the enemy. But I just remember them all kind of looking at us like we were a little bit crazy. And just because they didn't have the experience of knowing exactly what was about to happen. So we're all like worried when we start actually, when it was actually my time to leave, we get on a convoy, we roll up to the dam. And we're all thinking about that guy from 3-3 who, when we showed up, it was his last ride up to the fucking dam and he was, hit and killed. So we're all worried about that. Luckily, we didn't have anything like that happen. And we fly on a CH-53 from the dam to Al Asad. And that's like our first taste of like not combat. I mean, I had done those two weird missions to Baghdad and to Mosul where I had been at these big bases for extended periods of time. But we were going home, so it was like a different vibe. Everyone was in pretty high spirits. And we all were kind of chilling, doing our thing, decompressing a little bit. And I remember I ran into a guy who I played football with in high school named Gary Andrews. And he was a bigger guy than me. He played linebacker. We enlisted at like we went to boot camp at the same time. He was Motor T and I was a rifleman. And because rifleman or because infantry's MOS school is so much shorter than Motor T's MOS school, I was basically leaving Iraq after being there for as long as I was, and he was showing up for his first time. I remember Al Asad is such a huge base that there's actually buses that drive you around. So if you wanted to go to main side in quotations from where the where you know where they kept my the transient Marines who were just cycling in or out, it was like a 15-minute bus ride. And we had gone to the PX and I don't know exactly what we had done. Maybe made some phone calls, called our family, said, hey, we freaking made it. But I remember we were standing at the bus stop. And then all of a sudden, someone's just like, Braxton? I look over and it's Gary. And I'm like, dude, what's up? And he's like, bro, I just got here. What's it like? And I'm like, ugh. Keep your head on a swivel, dude. Don't trust anybody that's not wearing a Marine Corps uniform. Like, don't trust any Iraqi at all. And, said, good luck. I'll see you when you get back. And then he got on the bus and I walked to where I was going. And that was that. He turned out to be all right. He's doing good. He's got a pretty big chunk of land up in Stafford, I think, and a beautiful family. So that's pretty cool. So we, then you go to Kuwait and you stay in Kuwait for a while. And that's where you pick up a civilian type airplane. I think it's TWA, who we get on the plane and the pilot's like, I flew 57 missions in Vietnam. Thanks for your service, guys. And we're all kind of like looking at each other, like, oh, this guy might be a little bit crazy. And we make the flight all the way, you hop around, you go to Leipzig, refuel, go to. Then I remember the first touch in America was Minneapolis. It was like, late spring or middle spring. So up there, it was still pretty much winter for us Hawaii guys. I remember we had a pretty long layover and we're all just bone skinny, and we're all standing outside, like where you pick up your loved ones from the airport. And you know, there's like 200 or 300 of us in our desert camis. We're just sitting there, just chain smoking cigarettes, like we were used to doing. And I remember just seeing civilians, American civilians, for the first time, and the looks that they gave us, and kind of like, and you're just wondering in your head, like, do these people think that we're cool? Are they grateful? Do they care? What's up? And like, it was also the first time that you see, like attractive girls, attractive young women, American young women, and so that was cool. And you know, we had a couple guys on a couple guys on crutches and stuff, and walking wounded, and people who were sick, and we just didn't look very fit, I guess you could say. We were all pretty skinny. We get back to Hawaii, and we had sent some guys home early, early. So not only during the rip do you like kind of stagger your way out just because you have to replace your fighting force, but we also had guys that we sent home like a month early called ADVON. You always send guys a month early when you go somewhere, and you always send guys a month early when you leave somewhere, just to get things ready so that when you show up back in Hawaii, there's like a barracks for you and everything's set up so that you can go to the armory and turn your weapons in and all that. You know, like there's a lot of logistical stuff that has to happen. And so we're flying in, and I don't know if any of you listening to this have been to Hawaii, but the Marine Corps base is on the northern side, Kaneohe Bay. And there's like a big bowl of the mountain range. And so the landing strip at the base is the like the front of the landing strip is like at the beach, and the back of the landing strip is like at the other beach, because it basically spans the entire Marine Corps base, because that's how it's just a tiny little island. And our approach was so crazy, and we basically flew into the bay from the northeast, and then the mountain range is like thousands of feet, and we flew into the bowl and did like a U-turn right next to the mountains. And I remember this guy was talking about how he was like a Vietnam pilot dropping bombs on the communists, which is pretty badass. But so you do that U-turn, and my heart is like just pounding. I'm so scared that we're gonna fucking crash, and all that pain and suffering is just gonna not mean anything. And then you come down, and when you're looking out the window, and one thing that blew my mind was like colors. Because Iraq is like very just white, just like pictures, like photography, like the combat camera, when they take photos, they like saturate it to make it look pretty. But in real life, it's just white. Everything is just like covered in like a fine white dust. Our camis were all super faded. Our gear was all super faded from the sun. And then we went to Minneapolis, which was like the Midwest from fall to spring is, you know, it's God's country. I get that. I'm from Indiana, but it's aesthetically, it's borderline depressing. So then we like came into Hawaii, and just the greens of the trees, the greens and blues and coral in Kaneohe Bay, that we like when you do that U-turn, you come down, and it felt like we were just gonna land right on the water, you know, like a belly landing. And just seeing all the colors and just wow. And then we landed, and it's a short strip, so it's a very like you're looking, it looks like you're about to land on the water, and then there's like ground, and then your wheels touch down, like half a second later, and then they slam on the brakes. Which we didn't even know that you landed at the base. We assumed that you'd land at Hickam Air Base, or at, which is technically Honolulu Airport. They share the same runways. And so that was kind of cool and surprising. We rolled up, and there was a big red carpet And you know, we got off, and that like the base general is there, and all these like our regimental commander is there, all these higher ups are there, and there's like they have cute chicks to like lay us with like the Hawaiian lays, and I know that's cheesy, but it was still pretty cool to be home. And I remember just the thickness of the air and the heat and the humidity was like kind of like whoa, you know, like after being somewhere with zero humidity for so long, it was a little bit, I don't know, it just was kind of crazy. So you get off, and again, just the colors, like all these like dudes' wives and girlfriends were there, all wearing like colorful sundresses and stuff, and there's just everybody's just wearing like not white or black, and it was borderline overwhelming. So then my parents and my family had come out, and I basically had told them, hey, the first night back, I'm just going to hang in the barracks, which is pretty much a good idea. And then I'll see you guys tomorrow, you know, the next day. And they're like, okay, cool. So, because we had a lot of logistic stuff that we had to do anyways. So, yeah, you say hi to your family. My family wasn't there that, like, at that ceremony, but you're like, or maybe they were. I don't think they were. And we then went from there to the armory to turn in our weapons, and you're there for a few hours cleaning the dirt and dust out of your weapon to make it spotless so you could turn it into the armory. And that's where people's wives and, like, you know, our friends' wives were like sliding us beers through the fence of the armory. We were cracking beers, like trying to hide it, starting to get drunk, which is a precursor to the day. And finally, we have our formation. It's like, you guys are off. You got the weekend off, and it's like hallelujah. So we go back to the barracks, we move in, and by move in I mean like our one box that we stored and our sea bags that we stored before we left is like waiting for us in our barracks room, because that's what Admon does. But what was also waiting in our barracks room by guys like Sears was there was one keg per fire team. So there's one keg per like four people, and probably not the best idea. So we start hitting it hard, and I remember we start getting rowdy, and this is like within 30 minutes we're all blackout drunk, or I guess not blackout because I remember it, but we're all just absolutely annihilated, and we're just standing on the catwalk, and there's a road that runs in front of the barracks. People were throwing beer bottles and beer cans at the cars as they drove by. I mean, it was just like rowdy. A taxi cab pulled up, and a guy is already just unconscious being carried by four of his friends, like one person carrying each limb. And everyone just starts cheering and like spraying beer everywhere and just going crazy. And basically, it got so bad that they sent a bunch of MPs and they like surrounded our barracks with MP cars just to make sure that we don't like burn the place down. Because I'm guessing they had heard. I mean, we had a lot of casualties, and it was a long fucking slog. And I think I mentioned earlier in this podcast that they had already told our parents that we were going to come home early because we lost so many people. So it was well known that we had a tough fight. Yeah, so pass out pretty early, get just annihilated. People are crying, people are getting emotional, people are out on the town trying to get laid. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. So the next day, I see my family for the first time, and I remember just like how for me, like, how kind of normal it felt, but then it also was kind of weird talking to them after all that. And just they're asking questions about it and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's a tough one. I can't really think of anything crazy that stuck out in my mind. I mean, my dad's a Marine, so it's kind of like in my culture. I'm sure that other people had a harder time relating to their family, but that wasn't really that big of a deal for me. And so then, hang out with them for a while. We're doing like no training. I think we'd show up for, in quotations, PT every morning for like a week or two, because they don't let you go home on leave for like a week or two. And during that time, it's just nobody gives a shit. Everybody's chilling. Our PT is like just hanging out. Everybody's hungover. We're all drinking a ton every night. And then it was time to cycle home. So I went home to, did I go to Germany first? I think I went to Germany to hang out with my family first, for a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then I went home and stayed with my buddies from high school for 2 weeks. And that was a little bit different because they were in college and I had just come home from the war. So a lot of people were asking tons of questions. But again, I'm a pretty laid back dude, so it's not a big deal. The only thing that really happened that kind of like scared me or bothered me or anything like that was my friend started a fight. It was not me. And if you listen to this, you know who you are. He picked a fight with a guy, and it's like, whatever. I'm not going to get into the backstory of why he fought, but it ended up to a point where two guys jumped him, and there was a guy on his back, and there was a guy, like, he was like fist to cuss with a dude in his front, and then a guy jumped on his back. And that's when I just completely lost it. And that like surprised myself with like just how bad I beat the shit out of the dude that jumped on my friend's back. And I mean, to the point where I don't remember much, but I remember just stomp like I was stomping this dude's face as he's just laying there lifeless on the ground. And then my friend, the guy who got jumped, is like, "Braxton, what are you doing? Settle down." And then it's like I snapped and I came to, and he kind of pulled me away, and then we like left. And it was just, I was like, man, I didn't know that I had that kind of rage. Like, I had been in a couple fist fights growing up, but they were very like, I was in control, if that makes sense. And it was very like, it's like a typical middle school fight where a dude does something and then you're mad at each other and then you fight each other and it gets broken up and it's whatever. But this was like the first time, like, I would have killed that guy. And it was, I'm not a big guy, or I wasn't at the time, and it was kind of like, whoa, but for the most part, I still felt pretty the same. I didn't feel too bad. So then we cycle back to, or we, you get off leave, you go back to the base, which actually leaves kind of an interesting concept. I don't know if I've touched on this before, where in the Marine Corps, especially during that time, I know that peacetime is different, and when you're at a command that isn't doing like a back-to-back deployments like we were, for us, leave was so important because it's like you might die, or you just got done with a tough deployment, so they would let you go like 10 days in the hole for leave days. And they expected you to take it. Go see your family. They have been, you were over there and it sucked, but just think about how your mom's been this whole time. And like, especially like my mother, I don't know if I've talked about it before, but she was basically making weekly trips up to Bethesda to see the two, three guys that were wounded. And she just has horror stories. I might have her on here someday of how it was like they just had to keep expanding the 2-3 ward because just so many guys were coming through. And like, her seeing guys that, like, when she came out to visit, she like took us out to dinner, and there were like a bunch of my friends that came, and like half of them are now in the hospital with like really bad wounds and stuff. So the Marine Corps is like, go home and spend time with your mom or whoever you have and decompress, and when you come back, it's game on. And so we get back, we get a ton of new guys, new PFCs. And I remember like the first week that we got them was when we did our Purple Heart ceremonies, plural, because we had to do like three of them because there were just so many Purple Hearts of guys who, you know, finished the deployment, you know, including a guy who got three Purple Hearts for three different times. And just the new guys, like, just check in and, like, I don't know. It seems like it would have been intense. We didn't really have the same thing when we showed up for the guys that went to Afghanistan, because they just didn't have as many Purple Hearts as we did. So that was interesting. Plus, there were a couple medals given out for valor. Tyson, I think, got a Navy achievement medal for when he saved Lieutenant Dwayne, or dragged him out to cover under fire. And then a guest on the show, Pokies, he got a Navy Commendation Medal for Valor for what we talked about in that one. I know the audio is really crappy on that one. It makes me super angry, but I got to pick up my game. And, you know, just the award ceremony was pretty interesting. And then a couple guys from Echo and Fox got Bronze Stars, and we had those ceremonies, and those were like battalion size ceremonies, so that was a big deal. And yeah, so another thing, it was pointed out to me, like, I harped on a girl, like, why was I angry at that young girl for going 2-3? And I guess I didn't say it, I thought I had, is she was the one that got killed when we were told that 50 people were killed by a suicide bomber early in the, you know, and then someone tried to break into the base and was shot. So that's why I was angry about that, is because here's this young, beautiful girl, and call me old fashioned, call me what you want, but we're kind of fighting this war against a culture that believes in, like, oppressing women. That's one of the, like, major driving forces behind the strife between us and in the Muslim world. And for us to just, like, send these untrained, well, not untrained, because that needs to be defined as well, is, like, to send these non-grunt types to the front lines so that generals and politicians can feel progressive and to win kudos for somebody. Like, that's a travesty. First off, there's no evidence at all that the Lioness program did anything positive. And we've gone into this before, is that, like, over there, if a woman stands up to her husband, that's very dangerous for her. And she could definitely get killed by her husband. And so I think the whole premise was wrong. But then also, just on a tactical level, like, and I think I said an example of, like, hey, it might be easier to get women to get searched if you have a woman doing it. So, like, there is kind of an idea, but in our case, we weren't doing, like, mass searches. We weren't funneling people into an airport, per se. We were just going into a house, and it's like, we can just have somebody watch the women over there. And, like, there were other techniques. Like, you could get them to kind of pull their clothes tight, so you could tell if they had a suicide vest on, like, real quick. And then it's like, hey, okay, thank you. You know, you could show respect. But taking these women and sending them to the front, who are, you know, her job, she was a red patch girl. So her job was, like, to look at clipboards and make sure that the right people get on the right helicopter and the right stuff gets on the right helicopter to go to the right base, you know? Like, that's her job. And then all of a sudden you take people like that and send them without any extra training. I mean, and if they say that they gave them a little bit extra training, bullshit. Like, I'm sorry, like, every Marine's a rifleman, but sending Marines to a 2 or 3 week course doesn't make them a rifleman. Spending 3 months or 2 months learning every weapon system and doing, like, squad attacks and learning how to do big attacks and stuff, and then being part of an actual rifle company and doing individual up to battalion size ranges and attacks and learning how everything works over, you know, if you count our whole workup plus SOI, that's 9 months straight of infantry training. And then to take a Marine who went to 2 weeks of infantry training at MCT, and then went to their MOS school and did whatever they're learning up to like 2 years. Some of them are long. Like, there's a difference. And like, we need people like that because things need to happen, and we need beans and bullets, whatever the saying is. But I just find it unethical. I find it illogical. I find it sophomoric and immature, and it's just self fallacious, I guess you could say, because people like these generals are they're like, yeah, thumbs up. I'm the most progressive guy. I'm the like, you know, I'm so progressive because I did this. It was such a good idea. I'm such a genius. No, you weren't. You weren't on the ground. You didn't see how these women acted under fire, because they don't react the same way as we did. There's also like, I can't remember if I've talked about it, but we had the Iraqi policemen trying to rape them. We had all sorts of bad shit happening, which women shouldn't be forced by their government to endure that. Like, it's fucking stupid and myopic. I can't stress that enough. And so yeah, this girl who I pretty much had a crush on was killed for no fucking reason. And like, I feel bad for the Fox Company guys. And if any of you are listening and want to talk about the situation more, and correct me if I'm wrong on anything, you know, I know that they had a hard time because when on social media and stuff, they still talk about it. They still go, man, she was such a good person. She was such a good Marine. All the stuff. And it's like, you know, why are we? I don't know. There's a difference between when a guy who knows what he was signing up for gets hit, and a person who doesn't, and this is man or woman, who's kind of just like at the last second thrown in there because of some stupid idea. It just seems pointless, and it just seems like a waste of life, and it's just aggravating. But I think I'm going to stop it here, and then on next episode, I'm going to get into the workup, because the workup was, it had some annoying stuff and, you know, things that are interesting and stuff like that. While we got ready for our next deployment, which was only 8 months away. So thank you for listening. Yeah, have a good day.